South Sudan on Saturday became the world's newest nation when it officially became independent of the Khartoum government. The event is the culmination of a 2005 peace deal that ended more than two decades of civil war between Sudan's Arab-dominated north and mainly Christian and Amnist south. The conflict left over a million people, mostly civilians, dead. Rob Rees is the program officer for Sudan at the British Catholic Aid Agency, CAFOD. He spoke to Charles Collins about the role the church must play in the new country.
I think for the world, it is a sign that conflict can be resolved through negotiation and can only be resolved through negotiation. South Sudan has been suffering conflict for more than 40 years of its independence. And the conflict was going nowhere. They thought that they had reached a solution to it in 1972 with the end of the first conflict and the signing of the Addis Ababa Agreement. But then 10 years later, the war started again. So this solution now, South Sudan becoming fully independent, a member of the United Nations, should provide the long-term solution to that.
What challenges are facing South Sudan now? I mean, tomorrow is going to be a day of great celebration, but there are a lot of challenges ahead for this country, aren't there?
Yes, there's an enormous mountain for them to climb. We're talking about an area that is probably bigger than France, and there are no tarmac roads at the moment outside the main towns. That's the state of the lack of development that has gone on in South Sudan in recent decades. It has some of the most horrendous developments and social statistics of anywhere in the world. At the moment, a 15-year-old girl in South Sudan is more likely to die of childbirth than she is to complete primary school. Outside the towns, there's virtually no opportunity for secondary education. Health facilities are extremely rudimentary. There is also, probably the biggest challenge, though, is creating a united Sudan out of all of the diverse and competing ethnic groups that live within the region. The Catholic Archbishop of Juba, Archbishop Paulino Lukudu, summed it up very succinctly to me. He said, what we have to do, our biggest challenge is to get people to think of themselves as Southern Sudanese in the first instance and put their tribal affiliation to a secondary position. And that is an enormous task, and it's not going to be achieved overnight.
You mentioned the Archbishop. South Sudan does have a significant Christian population. What role does the church have to play in all of this, not just in helping the people materially and spiritually, but also in forging this identity as being South Sudanese?
Firstly, the churches, the Protestant and the Catholic Church, have a long history of working together on the side of peace and justice. During all the years of conflict, it was their voice that was speaking out on behalf of the ordinary people, calling for a negotiated settlement to the conflict. So there is this tradition of the church leaders working together. And this collaboration is going to be no less important after independence than it has been in the past. The only thing is the agenda will change. The churches are the only institutions really that cut across these tribal and ethnic divisions and also the social divisions. If you take the Catholic Bishops' Conference, for example, there are nine principal ethnic groups that are represented by the bishops. And the bishops all get along with each other, obviously. And so they can prove, they can demonstrate that unity between the different ethnic groups is possible. But this, the fact that they represent South Sudan as an entity puts them in a position of being able to monitor and, where necessary, to challenge the nascent government of South Sudan to ensure that the needs of the poorer people, the people out in the rural areas particularly, are addressed within government policy. It's going to take some courage on behalf of the church leaders to do that, but it's going to be a vital role for them to play, because if they don't do it, there isn't any other organization or structure that can do it.
This is, of course, the culmination of a peace process that, as you stated earlier, ended decades of civil war. How important is it for South Sudan to have good relations with the rest of Sudan? There have been conflicts already on the border areas. Do you have hopes that these two countries will be able to live together in peace?
I certainly do hope so, and I think all of the southern Sudanese who I met said the same thing, that we've got to work out a way of getting along with our northern neighbours. We've got more in common than we have dividing us. You know, we've been part of one nation in the past. We've got this huge common border between us. There has always been a tradition of movement across that border, and so we've got to find a way of living together so that we can both benefit from the fact that we are neighbours. We can't move ourselves away from North Sudan. They are going to be there and we are going to be here. And we've got to find a way of peaceful coexistence with them, as we have with all of the other nations that surround us. There's a very specific issue on which they've got to find a way to collaborate, and that is on the oil reserves of Sudan, 75% of which are in the political south. The only way that this oil can be utilized, can be exported and put onto the world market, is by exporting it through the pipeline which runs through northern Sudan up to the refinery and to the point of export in Port Sudan. This is one of the issues of the 2005 peace agreement that has not yet been resolved. How much South Sudan will pay to the north for use of the pipeline. And there's a lot of negotiation that still has to go on about this to reach an equitable settlement that will allow South Sudan to reap the rewards of this very important natural resource in order to have its own income to spend on the development of the region.
What are those southerners who live in the north? I mean, are there concerns that once the separation happens, and therefore the population of the new Sudan, the northern Sudan, will be even more predominantly Muslim, that the Christians might suffer in that case? Are there protections in place for those Christians and other southerners who are living in the north?
No, that's another issue that there hasn't been agreement on. It was mentioned in the peace agreement, but no satisfactory conclusion has been reached. There are different people in the north say different things. Some people say that the southerners, they will become foreign citizens and they will be treated as aliens and they will need to apply for residence and work permits. Other more extreme voices say that southerners in the north will be expelled on the point of separation, of independence of the south. To a certain extent, we've got to wait and see what happens and what policies the government in the north decides to implement. But it certainly is one of very great concern. Since last October, something like 300,000 southerners living in the north have already migrated to the south. Some of them have got places to go to, family to join. Others are still in transit camps and are dependent on relief assistance. The United Nations is predicting that there might be up to another 500,000 people who either decide to leave or who are pressured to leave after the events tomorrow. And if that happens, and certainly if it happens in a short period of time, it could be a man-made catastrophe that the government in the south has to face. That's the equivalent of having 10% of the total population of South Sudan as returning displaced people. And in a country where I've already mentioned the basic services aren't even adequate for the resident population, and where parts of South Sudan are already suffering from the issue of food insecurity, shortage of food because of unfavorable climatic conditions recently, then there's the potential for a humanitarian disaster.
So, final question. The UN has promised troops and police starting tomorrow. What role does the international community have to play for South Sudan to become a success?
Well, apart from providing the security monitors that you've just mentioned, I think that the international community needs to accompany the government in the south to help them to establish good policies, to help them to understand what participatory and democratic government really means in practice. When you think that for much of the last 50-odd years, the South Sudan has been in a state of civil war, although it's had some years of self-government within that period, the majority of people who are forming the government in South Sudan now are former military commanders, and very good military commanders they were as well, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they will make good politicians. And so there needs to be, as I say, accompaniment of the government to help them to establish the proper instruments of government and enable them to work effectively. You know, for example, people are talking a lot about the threat of or the danger of large-scale corruption within the administration in the south. The international community, that's something that the international community can help with to strengthen the Government of South Sudan Anti-Corruption Commission, which is already established, but which needs to be given more authority and more influence in order to be able to really get to the root causes of corruption. The other issues around, as I say, participatory government, what it means to be able to devolve power to the different regions, devolve authority to the different regions, ensuring that there is equitable distribution of the resources available to the central government to make sure that there is development that goes on and is adequately funded right the way across the region.